Just a heads up, everyone, these are adults having adult conversations, so there is the possibility of adult language. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Magic Lessons, a podcast produced by MaximumFun.org and Riverhead Books. I'm Elizabeth Gilbert, and I just wrote this book called Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. But even when I was finished with the book, I didn't feel like I was really finished with the subject. So I wanted to make this podcast where I could take the subject of creativity out into the world and have real conversations with real people about it. And that's where magic lessons come from. And what are magic lessons? Roadmaps for the path to creativity, the extra nudge we need when we're feeling stuck in our creative lives. Hey everyone, welcome to Magic Lessons. I'm Liz Gilbert. In the last episode, I spoke with Erin, a blogger and a mom who wants to get serious about writing a book. I gave her my take on what she might do, gave her some assignments, gave her a little coaching. But I also called up my friend, Cheryl Strayed, to ask her for a little more advice. Hello.
Hi, Liz. It's Cheryl. How are you?
Hi, Cheryl.
You're making a podcast.
I'm making a podcast, like all my heroes do.
I know. It's become like the thing all the cool kids do now. So I'm so glad you're finally joining us, Liz.
Thank you for letting me sit at the cool kids table, Cheryl Strayed. All right, sweetie. So here's what I'm coming to you for. So I spoke today with this woman named Erin. She's become a very successful blogger. She writes about motherhood and about women's issues, and it's been a great creative outlet for her for the last 6 years. However, she is now at a point where she feels like that blog is kind of sucking a little bit of life out of her when what she really wants to be doing is writing a book. She's got kids who are 6 and 9, and so they're out of the house a lot at school. So suddenly she has all this time opened up, and she really thought that as soon as they walked out of the door to go to school full time, she would just dive right into this book. But she's been procrastinating because I think she's afraid to. She's afraid to begin it. And these are the specific things she's afraid of. She's afraid that by working on a book and doing this thing for herself, she's betraying her family, who should be getting 100% of her attention. And she's afraid of what will happen in the community if she speaks her truth. These are two things I thought you might have things to say about, both as a mother who is also a writer, or a writer who is also a mother, however way you want to word that, and also as somebody who has written some pretty painful, intimate things about her own family and her own truth. So I'm going to turn it over to you. What would you say to Erin to begin with, and then we'll take it from there?
Well, first of all, nobody's family should get 100% of anyone's attention. I mean, we do have to have our own lives. You know, the essential thread in my life has always been my identity as a writer. And so, you know, when I became a mother, which also is an essential identity in my life, it wasn't like, you know, one had to move aside for the other. I had to learn how to hold both and honor both.
Can you give me an example, Cheryl, of a time in your life where you felt like you deliberately made that choice, and what that felt like and what that looked like?
Way back in January of 2010, when I was on the home stretch of finishing the first draft of Wild, I went away. Like, I left my kids for 3 weeks. I went to a remote cabin in rural Oregon, and my children were at the time really young. They were like 4 and 5. And one of the biggest struggles was that, from, you know, inside of myself, how could I possibly leave such young children for so long? And I'm quite sure that a lot of people would judge me for it. And I think I might have judged other mothers for it before I did it myself. And I decided to do it because I had to finish my book. I'm not able to really sink all the way into a book when I'm in the company of a bunch of people who need me to make dinner for them and follow them around the house and, you know, do all the things you have to do with children. I knew that I needed to immerse myself intellectually, spiritually, emotionally. And so I did. And it was hard, and it was I missed them, and I worried about whether they were going to be okay, and they were. One of the things I did on day one of that 3 weeks away is I said to myself, you cannot spend this entire time missing the children. You know, you're here for a reason, and it is to do this work and to give this work all of your attention, so give it. So I did that, and I went home, and I thought, you know, what have I done to my poor babies? And I get home, and they're just overjoyed to see me. And within 10 minutes, it was as if I had never left. They were perfectly fine. I mean, one thing we forget, I think, is, you know, we all have different mothers. For some reason, as a culture, we've decided that there's like one or two kinds of moms.
The good one and the bad one? Isn't that generally what you're given as a choice, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I didn't have that kind of mom, and you didn't have that kind of mom. And and I think that in Erin's case, she needs to really seek the sort of tribe of other women writers who have struggled with this kind of guilt that our culture puts on us, and you know, really work to sort of cast it aside. Because I do think, I fully believe that one of the greatest gifts I've given my children is the example of a mother who pursues her passions like a motherfucker.
Thank God you did.
Thank you.
You know, because you gave us Wild, and we needed that. We needed that book. Obviously, a lot of us needed it. So thank you for that. And thank you for telling women what you had to do to write it, which I think is also a public service, right? That it wasn't while the baby was rocking gently in the bassinet at your feet that you wrote your, you know, like that there's sacrifice to be made in doing your creative work, and there's an urgency, and there's boundaries that have to be set, that all of these things are very real.
You know, I think the next thing we do, and maybe Erin and I and all of the women who are, you know, writing and mothering today are part of this, you know, redefining, you know, how we work and how we mother. It's a room that we've granted men throughout time and fathers throughout time. And, I think one of the complicated things about this is we do tend to be a culture who likes to think in dichotomies. You're the good mother or the bad mother. You're there for your children or you're not there for them. And, you know, almost always in every case, you know, whether it comes to creativity or life or love or sex or, you know, being a parent or not being a parent, the truth is that muddled middle where a whole bunch of things are true at once, and sometimes they're in contradiction to each other. I think we sort of play life in the major notes, you know?
Yeah.
And it's like, were you there? Did you love them well? Did they know it? Did you fix it when you fucked up? You know, those are the things that that really matter to us over the course of any given relationship or any life.
As long as you had a good enough mother,
yeah,
you're going to be fine, which is what most of us very luckily got. Some of us didn't, but most of us got a good enough mother, right?
Yeah. The other piece of Erin's question, and it has to do with being a good enough writer.
Yes, that's what I was getting to. Yeah, you got to let yourself be a good enough writer too.
Encouraging people to essentially just let themselves be, you know, they don't have to be perfect. They have to be good enough. They have to create. They have to try, you know, and I think there's such power in that. In my own journey as a writer, when you were telling me about this moment that Erin's in where she is like, okay, I've had this successful blog, but what I really want to do is write a book. And now her kids are at school, and she has what she, you know, has been waiting for a long time. She has this pocket of time where she can start to write a book, and now she doesn't want to because it's scary.
Yeah,
and
it's always scary.
It's terrifying. And, you know this feeling so well, and I know this feeling so well, and you know, I guess I won't speak for you, but I think I'm going to be speaking for us both when I say, and it's always scary. Like every single time you start another book, you're like, I can't write another book. I can't do it.
Yeah. I don't have anything left. I put everything I knew in the last one. If I'd had more, it would be in there.
Exactly. Exactly.
I wanted to ask you too, if you had any words for Erin about her fears about what her family will say about whatever truths she's going to be revealing in this book.
Well, of course, that is the most complicated part about writing about your life. I mean, of course, you've dealt with this too. You have to be honest. You have to be deeply honest. Often what we fear as writers, it really isn't, you know, we fear condemnation. We fear judgment. And what I've found in my own life, that's not what I've gotten in my writing. When I write about something that I think people will judge me for, almost always, instead, they say thank you, because you told my truth too. Now, it's a little different thing when we're talking about writing about people who are actually in your life, you know, your partner, your family, your friends. There, my advice is really to try to find that balance between revealing your own truth and protecting the privacy of others to the extent that you can. That there are so many different ways that I think when we first come to a story, we think, oh, you know, I'm going to have to write all about my, you know, sister's drug addiction. And in fact, when you get beyond, you know, those first ideas of what you think the story is, you're getting deeper into your own truth instead of revealing other facts about other people's lives. And so my advice is really, first of all, do the writing first. There's not, you know, unfortunately, there's not a direct portal from, you know, most of our computers to, like, the pages of the New Yorker. So it's not as if everything Aaron writes is going to be immediately out in the world. During later drafts and during the editing phases, that's when you can start to ask those deep questions, like, do I need to reveal this or that about, you know, a family member? What are the consequences of me telling the truth about what I think of my father? Or, you know, I'm giving examples that I don't know apply to Aaron, of course. And I think that those are questions for a later part of the process. A lot of people use this fear as a barrier to even beginning. You also don't know what's going to be in that final draft. I wrote about my brother in Wild, and he and I had the deepest conversation of our lives after he read the book, because it gave us a kind of language and of intimacy that somehow we hadn't been able to come to in our conversations, you know, in our relationship. So, you know, actually, literature can sometimes serve as an opening. You and I both talk a lot about being fearless and brave and taking risks, and that's absolutely what writing is about, and that's what creativity requires. And I absolutely have stories. I have so many juicy stories, Liz, that you've never heard, because telling them would violate somebody's privacy or hurt their feelings, and I don't like doing those things. You know, one of the things I've written about over and over again, obviously, is my grief over my mother's death and my relationship with her. But, you know, and obviously I would have my mom back in a second, but I've also seen as a writer, you know, one of my jokes is the upside of having a dead mom is you get to write about her, you know, and you're free to say whatever is true or whatever you believe to be true.
My beloved grandmother just died at 102. And 101 and almost two, but I'm going to give her the 102. Anyway, I was out visiting her, and her mind was sharp right up until the end, and she was the last survivor of a large family. And she was telling me some family story just last year, and I said, wow, Grandma, is that really what happened? And she just gave me the slyest grin, and she said, who's going to dispute it now? And I thought, that is the best case for not smoking, for taking care of your health. Like, I want to be the last one who gets to tell the last story. I want the last word. And until then, there's plenty of other stories to tell. But there are some that may have to wait or not, you know, but yeah. No one can make that decision for you.
Well, and sometimes it's not even that they have to die, just the passage of time. As we know, our perspectives on things shift over time. And sometimes you need to wait till the right moment to tell the story. But you know, what I think Erin needs to hear right now is she just needs to get to work on this book and write and see what's there and see what comes.
Right.
And, you know, I think that there is the fear of revealing the lives of others. There's also the fear of revealing our own hearts on the page.
Right.
And, you know, for that, I say you don't get to duck behind anything. You do have to delve into the deepest, darkest, most interesting waters. And it's really a fun thing to do. And it's a little scary, too. But the best things are a little scary, or maybe a lot scary.
Mm-hmm. I love that. And the big difference between writing a blog and writing a memoir that's a book is the blog, every day you write and you hit send and you put it out there. And the book, you can nourish and nurture and shape and alter that thing for years. And there's, by the time it's finished, it's curated. And you
yeah.
are the discretionary member who gets to decide exactly what is in that story and exactly what is not. And that's a process that you can do privately for a really long time until it is exactly the thing you are comfortable putting out in the world, nothing more, nothing less. And that's the great beauty and the glory of doing your own art.
Yeah.
Sweetheart, thank you for talking to me, and thank you for your generosity with Aaron and all the Aarons out there.
Oh, yes. And Aaron, good luck. Go write that book while the kids are at school and maybe even go away, you know, and continue writing that book.
Love it.
I really do wish her well. And Liz, it's always so awesome to talk to you. I think you're the best and the greatest, and Big Magic rocks my world.
Oh, honey.
And thank you for all of your books.
Thank you. And one of these days we're going to do this face to face. I can't wait.
We're going to do it.
And until then, we'll just keep making other people write books. I love you, and we'll catch up soon later, okay?
Okay, bye. Smooch.
Cheryl Strayed is, of course, the best-selling author of the memoir Wild. She's also the co-host of the amazing Dear Sugar podcast, where she gives even more spot-on advice. You can find out more about her at CherylStrayed.com. Thanks for listening. I really hope you'll join me next time. Magic Lessons is produced by MaximumFun.org and Riverhead Books. Michelle Siegel is our producer. Our executive producer is Jesse Thorne. Our theme music is by Dave Cahill. Special thanks to Becky Salatin, Jeffrey Klosky, Michelle Kafopoulos, Lydia Hurt, and Paul Ruest of Argo Studios. If you want to learn more about my ideas on creative inspiration, check out my new book, Big Magic, Creative Living Beyond Fear. It's published by Riverhead, and it comes out September 22nd, 2015. You can find out more information about my comings and goings on elizabethgilbert.com, and you can always find me, personally, on Facebook, because I'm there literally every single day. So let's keep the conversation going. Thanks, everybody. Next time on Magic Lessons, a woman with the most boring job in the world, but who's harboring a crazy passion for fiction.